First order is approving the minutes from our last meeting.
I'll make a motion to approve them.
What stipulation there, just a typo on the dates for motion one. January 15 should be.
Where's the motion one? I see it goes right to January 21st. Oh, on the first page. Oh, 2015, you're right, it should be 2016.
I didn't even look at them.
That's just a typo.
Yeah, good catch, good catch. So, yeah, we can still pass those.
Oh, yeah, as amended, or as corrected.
Okay, as amended, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, okay, carried. 3-0. All right, Tim, we're gonna give Tim the floor quick.
I'm very quick, really don't have a lot to report this month. Really about the only thing we, since I spoke to you last, about the only thing that's really going on, we have a new board, as you know. That you guys voted on. So anyway, we had our first board meeting with the new board, so. First meeting went off without a hitch. We ordered new recycling roll-up containers.
Saw that.
For about, ordered 82 of them for about $380,000 tomorrow. So in the next month or so.
Wow.
But we're getting our first series of, I think, 8 of them in tomorrow.
Good.
Put into service at the various towns. So, and we've been selling the old run-out box last week, and we got another 10 going out.
Great.
Are they being sold for scrap? Or?
So far we've sold 20 in two lots of 10, and two different haulers bought them. I don't know what they're going to do with them.
How much do you get on them?
Well, surprisingly, I had it for 10 of them. I was expecting somewhere in the neighborhood about $6,000 for 10 of them. Mm-hmm. The first lot.
Wow. What's the price new?
New. These are heavy duty boxes. At the time we bought them, they were probably.
And you get 1,100.
They're pretty good.
Yeah. No, that's what I mean. You got a lot of mileage out of them.
We got a lot of mileage. A lot of them are 20 years old, and we have a welder that works full time on these boxes. And as long as he has a good floor, the welder is phenomenal. This guy can build anything. Builds an entire new box. As long as he has a decent floor, he can build an entire new box, walls, hinges, everything from scratch. Boxes that he looked at and goes, they're too far shot. That's about it.
Question?
Any questions?
We're aura-rayed out after last month.
What is the single stream situation last month?
It's up to zero.
Okay.
Up to zero. We really make it 10.
Yeah.
So from February to zero, I'll probably end March. It's going to be zero. So I don't know what's going to go into. First, when the brokers were talking to me, they had a little more dire predictions for the year.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't expect it to change. We were going to be at negative 10 most of the year. Then up to zero. So we're at zero from February to March. So I don't know what's going to do for it. They're a little worried because the commodities are going like this all over the place. Although I did find out today that carbon went up $13, so that's good.
Yeah.
It does add up. I just did find another hauler for $2,000 this time. I'm following the recycling. So,
that's two. Sure. Do you know, or I guess it's too soon to tell, maybe we have to talk to the, or we should engage with the board, but do you know about single stream and what to do with that? Is the price of it fluctuating and in some cases the agency is losing money on
it? I mentioned at the last board meeting and told them what I would do. Two of them are very new.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, as you know, has been out. Things have changed a little bit, but my recommendation to them was, we should probably do this on a quarterly basis. So in the middle of March, look at this quarter. Because I don't want to charge 1 month and not the other month. And,
right.
Or if it's staying at zero, we'll just keep it at zero.
Just with one exception or not single stream?
Kingston's not single stream. Saugerties, Marbletown, Ulster.
Marbletown's single stream. I'm pretty sure Marbletown's single stream.
Yeah, they're single stream.
Oh, they said not single stream. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the ones that are single stream are Kingston, Marbletown, Saugerties, Ulster.
But Marbletown is bringing a single stream to the agency?
No. Oh, yes. They're just not bringing the solid waste.
But has no contract for solid waste?
No.
No, not for us to service them. under the flow control law, the MSW has to come to us.
Right.
But the recycling, they can do whatever they want with. And they went single stream, so they have a third party. And the same company is also servicing Soggy's. They also went single stream. So they just come and dump the single stream pile. You know. Good news is I was a little nervous at the beginning of the year because some of these companies, brokers, talking about, well, we might not even take it anymore. That's how markets were going into it. And their economic projections were not good for the year, but it seems to be easy.
Definitely think it's worthy of further discussion.
Yeah. And if we do it on a quarterly basis and the board seem to go, you know, they seem to agree with that, that might be something to look at. Or, you know, if it stays at zero, it was a zero last year for a few months. We didn't do anything. You know, it was still costing us manpower, fuel for the equipment where we're losing money on it.
And especially when you're, when the agency, I mean, from my perspective, is being used as the place of the work,
mm-hmm.
but only when it suits those people who bring it. But as you said, you know, vendors, if they knew they could make money on it, wouldn't bring it to the agency, but when they're losing money, they dump it at the agency door.
Well, we're basically the dumping ground.
And
probably about 3/4 of our tonnage is from the private sector. So, you know, like 20% is from the municipality.
Right.
So, and that includes City Kingston, which is huge. But yeah, you're right. I think I may have mentioned it last time, but in 14 we brought in 6,000 tons. In 15 it jumped to 9,000, so it jumped by 30% a year. Why? Because it's not worth anything.
Right.
But as soon as the market starts to take off,
they sell.
It's never going to take it right back out of the agency. Kind of down, so.
Yeah.
Just take the financial hit. So if we charge $10 a ton, I'm okay with it too. I don't know. It's something we talked about. We end up looking at doing that for next year. We look at the budget for next year.
Yeah.
Maybe just charge it. You know. Give them the heads up. Next year's budget is going to be $10 a ton. We get our budget out prior to the municipalities. That's done intentionally to try so they can sort of prepare their budgets as well. Although ours is typical when you're talking about markets, because you're trying to pretend our revenue is based really based on economy. So that's the other option.
Okay.
So right now the good news is it's here at all. Although I'd say that, but it's worth at the good times we were getting $12-$15 a ton.
Okay.
Any other questions? Well,
yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Right,
Tim, have a good have fun on bike this week. All right.
Can I just,
sure.
Can we, but we don't have to talk to Tim about it now, but we should start thinking, I think, about having a meeting.
Now it's the 70s. We could
right.
do it more.
Yeah.
Probably May or June.
Yeah, that's great.
Before summer vacations hit.
Yep.
And so, yeah, actually, would you mind? We'll do that next month.
Okay.
Maybe we'll ask them May.
Perfect.
Or whatever. We'll get it set up next
okay.
month. Or I can shoot them an email.
We'll hold this committee meeting at the.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then we get it. Nice tour. Okay. We'll jump to the resolutions. Dennis, you don't mind if we let Chris go, do you? And then you'll go. You guys want to flip a coin? Chris, you want to just, why don't we do 168? That's
sure.
the one you...
Yeah. So 168 is a negative declaration procedure for the Kingston Rail Trail project.
That's in your packet separate, your paper.
That's the project that would connect the city of Kingston to the Hurley Rail Trail, which is also known as the ONW.
Mm-hmm.
You may remember you approved last year the initial scoping of that, and we looked at two alternative routes. One was going down the old ONW, which is a more direct route. The other was using the UND and Route 209. So we did a full evaluation of both. We looked at the cost of both. We looked at the environmental issues around both. We're going to go with the ONW, which is a more direct route. And it will basically extend the ONW rail trail from 13 miles to 15 and link it right into the sidewalk system of the city of Kingston. So we're at a point now where we finished a draft design report that went to the New York State DOT. 80% of the funding of this is from the federal government, and the other 20 is from the state. So the DOT has to approve every phase of this. So this is just one of the next things we're doing. You're also going to be voting on a contract to do the second part of design. Like, we didn't do a lot of the detailed survey work and detailed design because we didn't want to do it on both corridors. So now that we know we're doing the ONW, you know, we're going to finish that out over the next month. So if there's any questions, I'd be glad to.
No. Makes a lot of reading.
Oh, it's a lot of stuff. Yeah. You know, and that's a format that DOT requires, so a lot of it seems superfluous and repetitive. It's very, very formula.
Okay.
But it basically found that we're reusing an old existing corridor. We're not proposing to do any filling of wetlands and, you know, minimal, if any, impact.
Disturbance.
What do you think the timeline is on the project, this section of the project?
Construction next year.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, so we hope to have an approval of the draft design document in the next 4 to 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. That's then followed by right-of-way, because most of this is owned by Central Hudson and Ulster Savings Bank, and we can't even negotiate with them until we get an okay on the right-of-way. So we would be doing that as we progress the final design, and then we would hope to put this out to bid next spring.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yes, please.
I'm a little bit. There's just a picture of the intersection of the railroad, the UMD, on 209.
What yes, that
on
was
page
one of
2-5.
That was one of the two alternatives. So we had a report out because we spent money evaluating both of them.
Okay.
That report talks about them, but the preferred alternative is O&W.
So we're not going to be going through here? The trail's not going to be going through there?
Correct.
Okay.
I'm so confused. No, it's going to run basically from Washington Avenue,
uh-huh.
And we're looking at a light system to get pedestrians across, and it will go
behind
by
the
Super 8 Hotel.
Behind the old Howard Johnson's?
Yes.
Across the bridge?
No, it's not going to go across. The bridge is the UND corridor. We're not touching that.
How's it going to get from...
It goes, there are two underpasses under the thruway.
Oh, there's two underpasses?
Yeah, they're right next to each other. So we're using the more southern one.
I got it.
So basically, like, the UND goes almost a straight shot westward, and we branch off and go down.
But doesn't it have to, it doesn't have to go over the stream. The Esopus is right
there. No, we avoid the crossing there.
We're already on the one side, the right side of the Esopus.
You're on the right side of it.
Yeah,
before
it shows
back
on 215. That was the major expense. Like, with the UND 209 route, we would have had to build a new bridge over the Esopus, and we would have had to redo the C9 bridge,
right.
Which is a railroad track.
They're
going to
go under.
So
is this one by the church off of Hurley Avenue? That's where this one is.
Well, they're both, you know, they both are very close.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly.
And the one, like, the kids from Kingston High School run on the O&W now.
Right.
It's an informally a trail. The groups cut the brush, but it's, you know, not a very good surface. Some of the areas are washing out.
I know exactly. I know exactly. That's fine.
And so this will be a trail like you have in Hurley, a 10-foot-wide paved trail with 2-foot shoulders, ADA compliant, so people of all abilities can use it.
Great.
And it's really nice because it's the first connection that if you don't own a car and you live in the city of Kingston, you really have no rail trail you can get to. This will be the first one you can get to with non-motorized alternatives.
That's great.
Biking. Yeah.
Is it going to be one of those pavements just for wheelchairs, I'm just wondering?
Is it going to be what?
Will wheelchairs be able to,
yes.
Like, one of those impervious pavements? Or?
No, it's just regular asphalt pavement form. So it would be like the existing Hurley Rail Trail, which is flat enough and wide enough and stable enough that it meets ADA compliance.
Good.
And any time we do a project with federal money, we have to do that. And we do it anyway. So.
It'll get more use.
Yeah. That's why these are popular, because they're nice and flat.
Right.
You take your kids, and they're not killing themselves going up the hill.
Well, what's a railroad? You can't have more than a 3% grade or
yeah,
something.
Yeah,
5%. You very rarely see them going up the hill. So, okay, any other questions? On 168? Okay, do I have a motion?
I'll make the motion.
So the Bartels, Legislative Way Row, is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carry 5-0. Okay, Chris, now we'll jump up to 122, which
sure.
Is requesting a transfer from contingent account pursuant to budget. This is not Chris's department. He's just here
Yeah, I'm kind of pinch-hitting the Department of Environment that couldn't make it. So please, you know, keep the bar low. You know, I talked to the executive early today about this, and he was, again, you know, he was there when they were pulling Jordan out of that stringer on the Esophis when the young woman died up there. He was actually there. So he recognizes how tragic that was and how difficult this was. He is concerned, though, about the precedent that we would set by spending county money on somebody else's property. It's not, you know, in this area where the stringer was removed by the National Guard, the debris was taken and it was put up on the hillside. So it's out of the stream right now. It's on DEC property. And it's just, again, it's concerning for a number of reasons. DEP actually cleared a lot of woody debris after Sandy and Tropical Storm Lee, and they spent a lot of money doing that. And that made sense because they're protecting their reservoir. They took woody debris out from around the reservoir. In this case, DEC has really diligently avoided going in and doing additional work because they don't want to set a precedent that they're going to be responsible for cleaning out streams. And in a way, you know, it really, in the watershed, should be DEP or DEC taking the lead on this. And it's not that this one time necessarily is going to bankrupt us, or it's more the precedent of going in on other people's land, taking that liability, and then also making a determination that was the place that this should be spent. You know, I'm aware that, I think, Richie, you and John just worked on a committee to look at long-term stuff. And I guess the way that Mike is viewing it is looking at it as a more holistic thing. I mean, if we're going to spend $20,000, I guess it raises the question, is this the best place to spend it? You know, if DEC was going to come in and do an evaluation, would they really spend it here? Again, I haven't been involved with the issue, but he wanted me to relay that concern to the committee. You know, in a way, it's like if we had a problem on the thruway and it was causing accidents, and we said to the thruway, we should be fixing this, and they're like, well, we don't want to fix it. You know, we don't think it's really a problem, and then we send our DPW up to fix it. You know, it's their... This is DEC property on both sides. This stuff is residing right on state land. So,
what? You may not have the answer to this since you're not the point person on it, but, I mean, I spoke briefly to Bob Sudlow today, and I spoke to Gary Capella, and then being on Soil and Water, I'm on the board, so I've heard about this. I've seen the pictures. The discussions have been ongoing. But I'm curious, from the county's perspective, what the conversation has been with DEC and DEP in terms of taking responsibility, because, I mean, I have the photos with me. When you look at this debris that's been pulled out onto the bank, it doesn't take a lot of imagination to imagine with a large-scale flooding event, which these things happen, you know, and sometimes they happen more than once a year, that it's just all going to go back in. And to me, you know, the explanation that I know it isn't on our property, which is where Soil and Water comes into effect. I mean, where we left it last meeting or even last year was that we were going to look in county to see if we could do it through our own DPW department. According to Bob, there's been very little to no movement on that front. So.
The way I understand it, we didn't have the proper equipment for the grinding of the larger stumps.
But so we would have to contract or rent just as Soil and Water is. But I mean, I'm just concerned about not so much the liability or the precedence that it's setting, but the moral kind of responsibility of not acting when. It's my understanding is this isn't the only death there, and I know that if you're trespassing or you're not supposed to be rafting or there's all these technical, legal concerns and truths, but the reality is I don't want someone else to... I don't want there to be another tragedy subsequent to this meeting and this discussion.
I think Mike's other point was this wasn't the only strainer either. It's not the only area that.
I'm sure it's not, but
you know, and again, it's out of the stream right now. His suggestion was why not push hard on the state to have them come and take care of what's on their property?
That's my question.
Okay, I'm going to
make a quick comment. No, I appreciate your comment, Chris, but I just want to say, you know, there was a girl killed here. And you know, more than any other community in Ulster County, and my father said this, and he's 100% right, there's nobody no communities that depend on that Esopus Creek for their tourism and their livelihood than Sandakin. And when they start, people die on that river, or people perceive it's not safe, they're not going to come back. So the strainer, and like Legislator Bartel said, they just took it a little bit off of the side of the stream. A big storm is going to go right back in. The bridge that got wiped out in Sandakin that was down for however long, a year and a half, they said trees hit that. That was one of the major problems. So we also talk about shared services. Every branch of government wants another branch of government to do the work for them. But this is shared services. We've had no snow this winter. I don't quite understand why we can't rent some or share services with other counties and municipalities and have our highway guys up there with chainsaws and doing it. There's been no snow. Nobody's been plowing snow all winter. So there should be time available. You know, the winter months are dedicated a lot towards road work, plowing snow.
Yeah,
they're not doing summer work.
You know, I think he's looking at it like, well, what's next? Are we going to have private owners who own a part of the brook?
You know what? That's what Cornell does. That's what Cornell Cooperative does. We fund them. We fund soil and water. We fund Cornell. They do private work.
Why wouldn't DEP be on the hook for this? I mean, you have all this money going into the watershed.
You know, Chris, we did this at budget time. Yeah. Why didn't the executive's office reach out to the DEP?
They've
got full-time staff. They could reach out and say, hey, could we do 50-50 course here?
A couple of things, if I can. One is that clearly from CWC's standpoint and that they have programs and precedent with respect to moving debris out of streams with respect to storms. So that would be one of the first places I think you should look.
Well, and also I'm a board member.
And also
on CWC.
You show against stream management program as well. There's a couple of places you could look. The other thing in terms of the location of where this, I mean, if we were having this discussion and it was in a different location, it would probably be a very short discussion in terms of our responsibility. So the responsibility here is directly related to a location. The fact that this debris is sitting on the stream doesn't mean it goes back into the same place it came out of. In all likelihood, it goes back into a different place and it's not as dangerous. The thing that you want to think about is strainers formed for hydrologic regions. The likelihood of a hydrologic event occurring here again may be high, but not necessarily from this material. So moving this material out may not necessarily help you in any way, shape, or form.
But that's just an opinion. It could happen next week, and it could be back in the water next week.
But I don't think that it's going to go back in the water at a place where essentially it creates a hazard to life. If you want to look at areas where you have debris in streams, take a look at all the streams in Ulster County. Take a look at the culverts in Ulster County. When you start looking at these numbers, they become extremely large, and I think that's the executive's concern. The estimate for removal of debris on the lower Esopus after Irene was well over $1 million. And that was just debris that was that landowners could see and as part of a cursory a look at the lower Esopus. Nobody removed any of that debris. And when there's disasters declared, there is money to remove the debris. When there are not disasters declared, then what ends up happening, that debris, it tends to remain. So you may want to think about this in terms of location specific,
and then,
not necessarily that this debris is going to give you a problem if it refloats in the stream. And you also may want to think about it in terms of the breadth of the undertaking of people that are going to be knocking at your door saying you need to do something.
So okay. Look at them one by one. Jet Legislator Hebner.
I totally understand the issue of precedent here. In my first 2 months, I feel like I hear the word precedent a lot. But my concern is that the reality of working with the DEC and the DEP is well documented, especially in that network, in that neighborhood. I mean, going back to, you know, some of the massive storms that hit the Shandaken area, the Olive area, starting from 2010 on, and the issues, well, the lack of cooperation from the DEC and the DEP when it came to local municipalities and groups trying to get some sort of answers or some sort of assistance, especially with debris mitigation. It's the history's there. So going forward, you know, it's hard to imagine that that history with the DEC and DEP is going to change that quickly, especially when you look at that area specifically. I mean, April 1st is the start of fishing season. We talk about tubing a lot with this issue, but a huge industry in terms of tourism and, you know, outdoor activities in that area is fishing. I'm an avid fisherman. That's a very popular stretch of stream. Fishing season's fast approaching, April 1st. I mean, just the mere idea of, you never know. I mean, just folks in there fish some of this debris coming downstream, even if it's not settled. Just the idea of having this coming downstream when you have fishermen in there. And you can't, it's hard to predict. So back in 2010, I don't think business owners in Shandaken would have imagined they would have gotten hit by 100-year storm after storm after storm. It's, you know, tough to tell. So it's very hard, and going off what Legislator Martell said, is that it's very hard not to, you know, make this effort now if it could prevent future damage. And then, you know, the precedent, you know, that's something we have to deal with on an issue-by-issue basis. Obviously, Ulster County Soil and Water, you know, is looking at this as a specific, you know, and so, I mean, that's the way I'm struggling. That's where I'm struggling. And I think it's not the county's fault. I totally understand the concerns. It's really the DEP's fault. But that's because of the long history of not acting. So it's hard when we have the ability to act, just not, you know, what in my opinion feels like the right thing to do.
If I could...
Okay, and then Kathy's going to go next quick.
You know, I think the challenge here is we all want to go in and take that out. The challenge is when you think about, like, a 14-year-old kid dying in front of her father, that's crazy. I mean, that's really sad, at the whole thing, and it's tragic. It's tragic the way they approached that, tragic what happened. The challenge as a policy board is you have to draw a precedent. You have to think about precedence.
But Chris, you know, I want to just say something. I just spoke to a business person 2 days ago, small business person, private person, that Sue, who's our economic development lead?
Susan Holt
was at her business for half a day going over different funds available for small businesses, and every fund she went over was a state fund, a small a federal fund, nothing for the county to help. The county spent a person's half a day salary in a private business doing something. Is that precedent? That's taxpayer money spending.
We do that all the time. And there's rich precedent.
It happens every day.
But I'm just saying, think about the precedent of working on another unit of government's property.
We do it all the time.
We don't do it all the time.
Are towns plowing county roads? Are counties plowing the county roads?
They do so by precedent and agreement. There's no agreement here. Look.
Are they letting us on the property to do it?
Well, let me.
Are they letting
the
us on the property to do it? Yes.
You had an agreement where they were funding this. Like,
let's get this straight. This is about money. It's about nothing else. It's about money, and that's fine. And I understand where you're coming from. But this has been floating around since September, October of last year. The executive's office wasn't interested in sitting down with DEP, CWC.
Rich, I don't.
They haven't been, and that's fine. And I'm not getting on you, but there's been no interest. Now, when it's time to pay a bill that everybody's done work for and work to try to get this issue resolved, now the red flag goes up. Oh, we can't spend $20,000 because it sets a bad precedent. Why didn't this come up 4 months ago when we were going through the budget process and doing it? Because it's just a way to throw clogs in a wheel, to not get work done, to not spend money that. Maybe he doesn't have. I don't know. But it's about money. It's about money. It's not about precedence because we do in other departments every day.
Well, Rich, can I ask a question? So let's say we have a high flow event in 6 months and this fills in again. Is it now our responsibility to clean it out?
No.
But if it becomes a dangerous issue and we feel it's in the safety of visitors of Ulster County, I would pay for it.
Think in terms of the geometry and hydrology of the stream. Like, this collects there because of a particular reason. Let's say that other stuff floats downstream, it doesn't go there. We know there's tremendous erosion upstream. That's why the Ashokan Stream Management Program works on grants. They're doing a stream bank stabilization. All of that's important so more doesn't come down. But just think about the, if we go in and clear that now, and that fills in by next summer, and some of these things will fill in really quickly.
You don't know that.
I don't know that.
Some of these things could be 15 years faster.
Okay, but would you say it could be next year?
I think it could happen. I'm not a professional.
Okay, but I'm just saying.
Chris, can I just say something? You're just naming all these different.
I'm just saying, Ashokan
watershed, Ashokan watershed system. CWC's got all these programs. They're federally funded, they're state funded, they're New York City funded.
Correct.
How much is Ulster County put in for any of these programs? Zero. We're asking for $20,000 county contribution when all these other agencies are putting millions of dollars a year in, and we're sitting here, the executive doesn't want to spend $20,000. We haven't spent 2%. We haven't matched a nickel of what these other people have been doing. They've been investing huge amounts of money.
That's not true. I mean, you understand something. We went up there and
zero.
We had some dangerous situations exist in the Big Indian Bridge. We went up there and spent...
Well, who owns the Big Indian Bridge?
Well,
we do.
Okay.
So it was a direct nexus.
Right.
On
and
that.
We went up there and we spent, you know, about, what, $90,000 worth of time and effort to move that material out of here. And it's not just about precedent. It's about solving a problem that may not be there.
The debris
on the side of the stream is not a problem. It's not a hazard to the stream itself.
Today.
Or maybe tomorrow.
But maybe it could be tomorrow. We don't know.
What we do know is that the likelihood of a strainer forming in that location is high. Whether the debris on the side of the stream is going to cause that to form is low. So if you think about where you spend your money and how you save your powder, is you save it for something that is
but what if we spend it on?
Is a known hazard.
What if we spend it on that stream? What if we spend a nickel on that stream? We haven't.
Well, can I just ask
we want
question?
Everybody else to spend their money but us.
Can I ask a question?
And it protects county assets. They're protecting county assets. They're protecting our bridges. Well, can I let Kathy finish? Okay, let her ask her question.
So, Dennis, I have a comment after Kathy, but to what you just said, are you saying because if this comes back into the stream, it's not likely to cause a strainer right there. It's going to move down. Might cause a strainer elsewhere. So is your point that we should wait till a strainer forms somewhere, and then that would be the place to make an effort that we would pull. If a strainer formed in the same place, we would spend our money because the National Guard might not be pulling our
own. I don't think I would say we would spend our money, but it seems prudent to take a look at priority locations along the stream that are directly related to access points, recreational use,
et cetera. Well, we should have all that available.
I'm not saying we do, but
so nobody's
done
a thing about it.
That would be the policy
nothing.
Direction.
Want everybody else to
spend
do
county money to do that? Rather than to start to think about we're just going to move something because it sits on the side of the stream. And I think the reason we're having this discussion is because Chris was adequately expressed the idea that had this been any other location, we wouldn't be having this discussion. It's because of what happened here.
Oh, clearly it's because of what happened here.
One of the things that I'd like to add to the discussion is that this isn't the first time that any group of people has been talking about this. I've been present at probably a half a dozen meetings. The Ashokan Stream Management Program had talked about that area before this happened and immediately afterwards and since then.
And what's been done?
In a regular ongoing way.
Nothing.
Well, part of the decision is along the lines of knowing stream hydrology and morphology and what the benefits are. The angling community actually has put money into looking at the benefits of large woody debris. That doesn't mean that you leave all of it in the stream and doesn't mean that you leave dangerous stuff in the stream, but it means you don't go take all of it out. And when you do take it out, you try to do it in a way that leads to preservation of the stream bank. A $20,000 project in this area may not be that. Ulster County has representation on the Ashokan Watershed Stream Management Board. DEP does, DEC does. So all these people have been in the room together. And that particular site was not even marked as a hazardous site prior to this accident.
Maybe they...
That has happened. So that has been achieved. in one of the desks at
that unfortunately, site. It took a death to achieve it, but
one
not, of the, at a teenager.
At one of the desks that
well, the other ones are 8 or 9 years earlier.
Okay.
Still.
No, I know.
One of the deaths that happened at that site, the person who died had been told by one of the tubing areas not to go up there and went up there anyway. So there is some user desire for a challenging experience that has also played into this. I would like us to do something. I don't see anything wrong with Ulster County putting money in. I don't think money is the issue at all. I really don't. I think it's whether or not if you're going to put money in, you are working in concert with these other organizations that know hydrology.
Kathy, the floods were 4 years ago. We should have been long finished working in concert with different organizations. When you suggest we start this year?
Well, I think...
I mean, the floods are in what, 11? 2011?
When you have
10, 11,
a death at a site,
12?
Then you know that you should do something at that site. You, if we want to take on doing 100 sites and turn this into a manicured stream, we will have other problems because we will certainly have more flooding downstream and we'll have potentially more loss of life. This is kind of the science of this. And what I see Ulster County doing, and maybe the committee that was put together should work on this before we put any money towards it, but even that committee seems like a desire to do, go an end run around a group who came to a different decision than you seem to want, which is go do something at this site where there's not even a strainer in the river right now.
Nothing's been done. The county's done nothing, invested no dollars in stream. The flood mitigation.
Money in soil and water conservation. But now we're being told
we're setting a precedent. So we've already done this before. We've given them money to go do projects in a stream. So what's the difference to what we're doing now?
What it seems like we could do is try to have a policy of how we put money in what we're doing.
All right, I'm going to let Tracy speak, and I'm going to just say one other thing. Hey, I'm just so aggravated because this has been going on for 5 months. And this is the first we hear of anybody upset, anybody aggravated. It goes down to money. This is all about money. It's got nothing to do.
I raised these same objections.
You never raised it to me.
I'm
going to let legislative board speak.
Say what I raised the objection about. When the group was proposed to at the caucus, the Democrats.
That was a month ago.
A month ago. It was the first I heard of it, and I said at that time.
This was 5 months ago.
There's already a group that's working
October.
On this. Have you ever been to that group and come and made a presentation and say you want something done?
We just created it.
No, to the Ashokan Stream Watershed Program.
No,
it's been working on this issue for...
Listen, they're professionals. They do this every day. And when people are getting killed and they are not addressing it, then maybe...
You think they didn't do it right.
You know, people go buy that strainer every day in a tube. And it scares the living daylights out of me to think that somebody stepped in a stream here... where they shouldn't have, obviously, and get swept into the strainer and killed. But somebody can go 100 or 50 yards or a quarter mile up the stream and go by the strainer with no problem. That's pretty damn scary when you're allowing 12 and 13-year-old kids to go tubing down a stream and to realize you step on a stream the wrong way and you're dead. It's crazy.
Those tubing services run tubes past there. Mm-hmm. That's a dangerous area.
They've gone up past it.
They go on their own.
But they've still done it, what I'm getting at. People still do it. No, the train dropped her off there and then took other people further up. They got off midstream, the train.
They advised them not to go in the stream.
What I'm saying is the train went further up and dropped other people off.
But I'm saying
the other people tubed right
they
by.
They get out before then, is my understanding.
Yeah.
I think they go all the way down to Phoenicia. When I was a kid, we went all the way down to Phoenicia. And then I'd go to the chimney hole. We'd go to the chimney hole. From Phoenicia to the chimney hole. Yeah.
They haven't.
The portal to the chimney hole. All right, legislative hotel.
So, obviously, this, because of the fatalities, it's an emotional discussion. But I feel like we're getting a little bit off the course of what was actually on the table. Because, someone stop me if I'm wrong. But what I understand from being on soil and water is that the National Guard, as directed by the governor, pulled the strainer out onto the side of the stream. I mean, I have pictures of it. In some places, it's pulled a bit of a ways back. In some places, it's right on the stream's edge. What soil and water then went to look at it, when I spoke to Gary today, he said that he and Adam also met with the DEC, and it was their impression, their takeaway from the meeting with DEC was that DEC had no intention to do anything further, that it was done. So we're not just talking about the potential of a strainer forming again at that site from that material, as described by soil and water. We're talking about that material moving downstream, and some of it's very significant. They're very big trees, which is why Bob told me we can't do it in-house, because we don't have a tub grinder that can grind over 14-inch diameter trees. So, you know, some of them look smaller, but a lot of them are hefty trees. So the concern is that the debris, what was formerly the strainer, is going to go back into the water and move downstream.
And get stuck at the bridge. And get stuck at the bridge.
Potentially causing damage downstream. Another thing that we haven't even discussed that Soil and Water is proposing to do is to seep, because it's now bare from being scraped, where when you look at the side of the stream elsewhere, there's vegetation, talking about reseeding to allow for some vegetation. Now, I am not personally very familiar. You fish there. There are members here who know it very well. I'm not super familiar. I look at this pile of debris. I hear the stories of concerns, and it's hard for me not to do anything when it only costs $20,000. I'm frustrated that we can't do it in-house, that we can't get... I mean, the assumption is that soil and water, obviously, they're not going to be able to do it without permitting from DEC. We could get the same kind of permit from DEC. We could rent the equipment. We could do it in-house. But if there's no movement on doing it in-house, and if that's a concern about in setting precedent doing it in-house, that's I'm not one who's going to just always fall on the precedent concern. I mean, we do talk about it a lot, and we might have other people knocking at the door. But I also, it's hard for me to say no when the strongest argument against it right now is about precedent. Like that's the strongest argument I'm hearing, and that's.
Well, and if I could, the other one is just effectiveness. Is if you're going to spend $20,000, does this, I live along the Walkell River. I know that we have a lot of debris coming down and hitting things like the trestle bridge at Springtown Road. Are we going to, and again, think about it. If you're going to do it on the Esopus, then you have other waterways as well. You have the lower Esopus, you have the Roundout, you have the Walkell. Again, $20,000 to take stuff that's out of the creek may not be the best use. And I would just say I would rather have the decision being made through the people that are working in the stream every day. I'm new to the issue, so I don't know all of the things, but I would just look at it and go, well, how about clearing the debris in the Walkell River, because when it floods, it hits my neighborhood.
We could do that too, but, there's no other river in Ulster County other than the upper Esopus, that a community is dependent on the usage of that river. I mean, like Legislator Heppner said, the trout fishermen, the tubers. There's no other river that has that much activity as the kayakers. You go up there, you go over any of those bridges, after April 1st, you look left and right, and you just see bodies as far as you can go. Tubers coming down, fishermen and women. There's no other stream utilized. And if to me, $20,000 is not a huge price to pay in terms of sales tax money. If they lose the reputation of being safe up there, that town's in trouble. It's in trouble.
Is there, has the county, you said earlier you don't know, have we directly reached out to DEC about this debris that's just been pulled up by this specific site?
I'm not sure, Jason.
Nobody's reached out to the CWC about it.
Because when I saw the resolution today, that's the first reason I called both Bob Sudlow and Gary. Was my first instinct was why,
Well, we budgeted
why isn't
for this
DEC
back in.
Doing this? No, but why isn't DEC responsible? And Gary said we met with them and they're not moving on it. And Bob said we're not moving on it internally. So I'm left with nobody's moving on it, and if we do nothing, it's just going to sit there.
Exactly.
And then maybe it's going to go.
And we'll have the same discussion in a year from now.
What I proposed, and it didn't get picked up on at the stream management program, is that we bring this angler, John Braco, who's a pediatrician and New York State TU, who does stream restoration projects using woody debris, putting it back into the bank in ways that then you use for a safe state stream bank stabilization. And his projects run in the range of $120,000 to $200,000. But you get a fix of that area. And you would presumably, if you did something like this, not have, you know, it might not be able to be done for that price at this particular site, but in the ones that he's done up in the Estable and other streams upstate, they, you get the change in the flow patterns of the water, so you don't get continual reaccumulation of the debris. So what I'm seeing at this site is we pull it out now, you debulk this.
Well, it's already out. It's already out.
Right, but I'm saying this is the problem.
And the county put no funds towards getting it out of the water.
But I'm saying that somebody pulls it out, then you debulk it and send it downstream, and then the next big event you have the strainer again. And
not necessarily.
Yeah, from
not if you're not if you're mitigating all the problems upstream,
but
too, which is being done right now.
No.
There's a lot of projects being done right now.
There's
a lot of projects.
You don't mitigate upstream debris coming downstream. That's the natural function of the stream. And you can't get rid of all that debris.
You can.
I mean,
it's reestablishing itself.
No,
so this is a site that always reaccumulates. And if you just take this $20,000 and spend it, you won't have that.
So maybe we'll budget $20,000 every 2 years. But then, if it proves successful, we'll budget $20,000 every 2 years, and soil and water can go clean it out every 2 years.
That wouldn't be as good a result as using 6 times 20 and fixing the problem.
Well, then you know what? Then we put it up this Shokan Stream committee, get it on the agenda. We spend it $20,000, and then by time 1 or 2 years comes, hopefully it's on their docket and they have a permanent fix, and then we're done. Because I can guarantee if this doesn't pass next year, it'll still be sitting there next spring, and then the following spring it'll be sitting there, and then the following spring
it'll be sitting
there.
Looking at the pictures, it probably
or it's
going to
get
worse.
And that bridge in Shandaken, not in Shandaken, in Phoenicia, that got moved, what, about 3 or 4 inches off the center?
18
inches, whatever it was. They said that was because trees built up into it, and then the water had nowhere to go, and the pressure. If that trees did not build up into that, it would not have been nearly as severe, or maybe not even moved it at all. I was up there because it ripped our cable out. There were trees like this that were stuck in it. It was like the Legos, you know, not the Legos, those
Lincoln logs.
Lincoln logs. They were like toothpicks stuck in there, and that was hurting the water. So you know what? These are going to get washed out of there, and they're going to end up in the Phoenicia Bridge. So.
Well, I'd like to see a stream.
Well, you know what? We're gonna vote. You know what, Kathy? With all due respect, the committee's going to, we're gonna talk now. You've had an opportunity to look at it. Is Mike Hines representative and here speaking?
I'm not Mike Hines representative in any fashion.
Well,
where did you ever get
you follow the budget. You've seen the budget. You've had an opportunity to come and speak to the committee, and this is the first I'm hearing of it. And it seems like that's how this county operates. At the last second, everything goes, people work together, we try to come up with a solution, and then at the last second, somebody comes in and raises red flags, and they've done nothing in the meantime to try to solve the problem. And I'm quite honestly getting tired of it. And you know what, Kathy? I'm going to tell you.
I've invested on this.
You've never talked to me once about it.
I didn't know you were going to bring forward this resolution. I asked.
But what about during budget time? It came through our committee. It came through the Laws and Rules Committee. It came through this committee, but Ways and Means Committee. I didn't see you speak on it once. I was on 3 committees that went through.
I didn't pick up on this.
Okay, so now when it's about to get passed, you pick up on it.
That was going to deal with making recommendations before you started spending money.
It was in the budget. We knew what we were going to do.
Okay.
Once it's in the budget, now we're paying for what was approved by the legislature.
I'm sorry not to have said anything earlier. If I had seen it then, I would have said similar things. But I'm saying them now.
3 committees it went through.
As somebody who's done a lot of work on this
and nobody complained.
As a complete volunteer of my own initiative,
okay,
because I live in that community.
Okay. So are there any other questions?
Thank you for just
letting me have okay.
Again, I don't have dogs.
No, I'm not mad at you. I just get frustrated.
I appreciate
these are all last
time.
Nobody from his office called a week ago or 2 weeks ago when this was submitted so we could sit down and work it out. I had a CWC meeting 1 week last Tuesday. Could have brought it up at the CWC meeting if I had an inkling that anybody in the county was going to try to say it wasn't a good policy or a good thing to do. I would have brought it up at the meeting last week. Was there all day?
I appreciate the time.
And
my understanding was
the
public
place
works
to bring it up.
Supposed
I'm sorry.
To, no, but my understanding was also that public works was supposed to be reaching out, which we were trying to figure this out internally. That was the understanding I had. Yeah. I mean, and nobody I did not have that understanding from this. I had that understanding from soil and water. So, you know, on the board we talked about it. I said, try and work it out, see if DPW can do it on their own, get access. And Gary was working to get permitting to allow access to.
Listen, if he could get the permitting and we could do it in-house, to me, I think he could burn a lot of wood in houses up there for the winter. You know,
it's a lot of wood.
It's a lot of wood, and it, you know, a lot of people burn wood up there.
I mean,
that's what they did in the old days, and nobody bothered you.
I mean, my other concern really is about the flow of communication with DEC and DEP. I mean, I feel like even if we move this forward, I feel like we should be urging DEC to kind of take ownership of some of this.
What's the Department of Environment doing? They could be working on this. Department of Environment.
No one's haven't been involved in all those discussions. And I think CWC would have been a great solution for this because I think that would be the direct...
Sure, and they have programs.
They have a person on that...
But their programs also...
As well.
You have to fill applications. There's approval processes. It's not going to get... If this just went through the CWC tomorrow, you're probably talking to... you know, a year, 6 months, a year. I don't know how long it would take. They have different programs and then have to be approved by the city. It's not just them doing it. The city has to review it. It's just another layer of putting things off. But if we started it 5 months ago when it was first submitted and we discussed it in the environmental committee, we might be halfway, might be three-quarters of the way home to a solution now without using county funds or resources, you know, or funds. But we're here today. You know, the tubing season starts in 3 months, 4 months, July, June.
Trout season's
April. You what?
Yeah, I think independent of the tubing, I think it's more, my concern is more about this potential for spring storm. But the photos, I don't know if everyone's seen the photos, but the photos Gary sent me, you know, the debris is, it's...
You
some
know,
of it's pushed back.
You know, the
some
sheriff lost two
right
boats
the
up there, too.
The,
you know
right
that, you know that, right, John?
I didn't know that.
The sheriff lost two boats rescuing the girl. They got sucked into that water, and they got folded over like, the one of them got, right, it got folded over like a tin can. And the other one went underneath. They couldn't even rescue the boats. The guys just let the boats go, trying to get the girls.
This kind of brings another question. Is the access, where people are accessing the river from... that would then lead to this point. Is it posted that it's very dangerous?
I think there was one sign. There was one sign, right?
It wasn't before.
Right.
It is now.
It's in Allison, right?
Yeah, it's by the cemetery.
By the cemetery, yeah.
So fishing spot.
Yeah, there's a big pull-off right there.
It's actually one of the better, you know, they actually give you a lot of space to pull off.
Yeah, no, it's a nice pull-off there. But, yeah. It's crazy. I used to tube by this all the time as a kid. All right, well, is there a motion? No motion? Sorry. Is there a motion? Any second?
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, carried. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris. Dennis, you're up. We'll go to 152. Adopting and issuing a negative declaration under 6 New York NYCRR, New York City Railroad, Part 617, State Environmental CEQA. The Carmine Liberta Bridge. Actually, NRCC, not Railroad. Over the Walk Hill rating impulse.
This is a negative declaration with respect to the State Environmental Product Review Act and the construction of the Carmine Liberta Bridge. It follows with a number of other resolutions, including resolutions to sign. Entered agreements with landowners for temporary construction easements as well as establishing a capital project. We need to do this resolution first in terms of order, the legislature. The county has been through a complete CEQA process. The only issues we have out there outstanding the issue, we still have an outstanding issue because there's some federal funding here. There's actually a NEPA determination, National Environmental Quality work that has to get done. That's being done by New York Rising, the Governor's Office of Storm Recovery, and we're still awaiting some information for them on the historic preservation aspects. associated with the bridge. We need to sign off because the actual bridge is eligible for designation as a state historic structure. We've had discussions with SHPO. Generally, what this means for a bridge that's past its useful life, as this one is documentation of the bridge itself before you tear it down. And we're waiting for that to sign off on the documentation that's been provided.
They're going to tear that bridge down?
Yeah, the bridge is in significant problems right now.
It's really bad.
It's got a red flag on it.
Oh,
it's now,
scary to walk.
They've now changed the lane configuration on the bridge in order, because there's problems on the one end of the bridge. It needs to come down.
Wow. No, I believe you.
I mean, I'm glad the work's being done, but what, there's going to be a temporary bridge?
That's correct.
Oh, they're going to put a temporary there.
Yep, there's a temporary bridge going in just immediately north of the existing bridge.
Okay.
That's going to impact some of OSI's lands on the other side. We're going to build a temporary abutment on both sides.
Wow.
And we're going to take a little bit of piece of the Gilded Otter's property. We've had a long conversations with both landowners. They've agreed to the construction easements at no cost. To the county, and we will put the temporary bridge in before we take the existing bridge down. In addition, there's a water line on the bridge that services the village of New Falls. We will relocate that water line during the time of the construction of the new bridge, and then replace it. And we're working with, we already have a grant from the New York Rising folks for about $90,000 for the water line and about $400,000 for the bridge. And I believe the total construction budget is around $3.4 million.
Wow.
For the total construction budget. And that's going to be done in-house, folks.
Really?
That's
yeah.
Great. What's the timeline?
We anticipate that we'll begin work on the new bridge. We'll begin actually cutting trees the day the legislature approves the resolution. We hope to begin to be cutting trees. We have to have trees down. We want to have trees down. I shouldn't say we have to. We want to have trees down to avoid any bat discussions, Indiana bat, northern longear bat discussions by the end of March. And then we would look at beginning the work on the abutments soon after that, with a temporary bridge probably installed, I would say, May, June, May period.
They'll go down. Is it going to be a two-lane one or no?
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
June.
I mean, that's a bridge that will just choke that town off. I mean, if you
and then
shut down.
We would, and then we would drop the existing. Go ahead, Chris.
No,
and I know they talked to the farmers just west of there and the businesses in Mohonk, and that's why they're doing
How is the traffic pattern to put the bridge up just north? Is the traffic going to
Is that a precedence, though?
A job?
It's a job.
That's a precedence doing
a
temporary bridge.
It's going to have such a, I mean, it's better than the alternative, better than having no temporary.
No, you got to.
But it's going to be, it's going to cause a major because that's already. I mean, I'm trying to imagine the fair. And,
I don't think it's going to cause the bridge doesn't cause the traffic problem. It's the intersection of 208, 32,
But then when you add
it, yeah, filters it down there at a reasonable pace.
The good thing about the jog is it's going to slow everybody down coming into town and going out of town. There's some really good things about the jog. It'll actually make the rail trail crossing a little bit safer.
Mm-hmm. And we'll have to look at the Gilded Otter coming.
Yeah, there you go.
So
have they ever done a replacement bridge before?
That's a question I don't have an answer.
Well, as you can say, this is a precedence you're setting, right?
Part of this has to do with one of the reasons you install temporary bridges is based on policy.
No, I think it's good.
Is that the typical policy for temporary bridges is if the detour is over 10 miles, you look at temporary bridges. In this case, we have an average annual daily traffic volume of about 12,000 vehicles a day, so we have a high AADT and a long detour. So the decision was made to install the temporary bridge.
I mean, there it is. That bridge is,
for it. That's
that
the
bridge
thing.
Is down it's during flood sometimes, but not long, maybe 3 days or 4 days.
Just for my own information, what is the cost savings to the county for the, you know, the businesses being so cooperative?
Like that would assume an estimate of me what the value of a construction easement is. I don't want to do that. Yeah, I don't want to. Yeah, I don't think it's a lot, but it's a lot in terms of the things that we have to do. We have to go through an offering letter and back and forth.
No, it's great.
Yeah, no, it's been great. They've been really great to work with. The county executive decided early on in this process that we form an advisory committee at the town level
So we've had four meetings of that advisory committee at the town level with all the stakeholders that were involved. They were public meetings, so much so that the bridge design actually got placed in the paper and asked the community to choose the various bridge designs. So
it was on Facebook.
Yeah, it was a really nice situation to watch a community come together and knew that we had to replace the bridge and have a discussion about how we're going to replace it and what it was going to look like.
Did they get picked the color?
It's going to be weathering steel on top. Yeah, we had a long discussion. I started that with federal color swatches on the bridge, and I said, boy, I don't really want to do this. And the fortunate thing was we had a long discussion about weathered steel. So the arches are going to be weathered steel, what they call Corten steel, and then the undercarriage and the substructure will all be galvanized. But the bridge will be wider. New policy for county bridges is to allow 4-foot shoulders on all county bridges where we can get them in. So this will have 11-foot lanes or 11.5-foot lanes and 4-foot shoulders, so we have access for cyclists. And in addition, there'll be a 6-foot sidewalk on the north side.
That's great. So you're not going to keep the temporary bridge.
It goes right to the new ridge trail that OSI is building.
Yeah, the thought is that we would rent the temporary bridge. So the temporary bridge would be a rental.
What do you mean? Oh, you can buy them and rent them?
You rent them. Oh. You can actually rent it. It's a monthly rental.
How much does it cost a month?
I don't know. I think the estimates for the temporary bridge are in the $250 to $350 range in terms of total bridge cost, in terms of total cost.
And it's not something that county would want to invest in?
No, total cost.
Oh, okay.
Total
cost. Well, I was going to say, boy, that's a lot for a month.
But we are also going to leave on the east side. The abutments we put on the east side, we're going to leave in place. Because otherwise, if absent those abutments, this would be a replacement in kind. It would be a type 2 action under SEACR. We wouldn't have to do any of this except... but since we were leaving the temporary abutments in place and the temporary bridge sort of put us in a different category and we didn't want to risk any issues associated with that, we're going to leave that in place. That's going to be an overlook for the Walk Hill River. So we already have the committee wanted that as it relates to the regatta that they have down in New Paltz.
Yeah.
So that will be an overlook.
That's great.
For that area.
Because that regatta is always too crowded on the
river. Awesome. Okay, do I have a motion?
I'm moving.
Legislator Heppner motion. Legislator Bortel, say he raised his hand. Legislator Heppner motion. Bortel second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried 5-0. Thank you, Dennis.
Yeah, thank you.
And Kathy, thank you. All right, now we're going to go back to resolution 121. Oh, no.
We have 156. Well, Chris is here. There's also a speaker.
Well, 121 is what?
Just we have regular.
Yeah. 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 Do I have a motion on 151 or 121? Just a minute. Mary, second. That one is, that's your budget
just
appropriation. That's your appropriation.
That's just the normal stuff that we...
Yeah. Okay. Any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried 5-0. Resolution 123, reappointing members to the Soil and Water Board. That's right, Legislator Cortez and Ms. Legislator Weyro, second. It's Leonard Tantillo, William Wilklow, Frederick Van Ostrin, and Joe Hasbro. So, and they're all reappointments?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've served for a long time. I've served with all of them there.
Okay, so we've got a motion and a second. Any other discussion?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. Appointing members, resolution 124, appointing members to the Soil and Water Conservation District Board. And that's, so James has taken Hector's spot, right? No, Ken's spot. Okay. 124. Resolution 124.
Moved by Heppner.
Question by Heppner. I'll second it. Any discussion? I just want to say in the spirit of bipartisanship, he's putting two Democrats on the committee, which usually is split one Republican, one Democrat. So
I think he couldn't find a Republican.
Really? Did he ask? He didn't ask Ron. He didn't ask me.
That's what I heard.
He didn't ask any of us.
No, I think.
Okay.
I think
all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Confirming resolution 146, confirming reappointment of a member to the Environmental Management Council, Dave Haldeman from Walkville, New York. Legislator Bartels will move it.
Second.
Legislator Lapp, second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, now we're down to resolution 156. We got to skip over one here. 156 is adopting and issuing a negative deck under state environmental CEQA for the water supply line to the campus here. Which
I can answer any questions about that if you have.
Yeah, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
They're redoing the Lucas Avenue Bridge.
Lucas Avenue?
Which is, where Lucas and 213 intersect. I call it the Lucas Avenue.
High Falls. Yes.
Is that going to affect this? Because
in a great way. Prior to the bridge being done, it was of such an age that it wouldn't allow, the NYSDOT wouldn't allow us to put the water line on that bridge, and we would have to bore under the roundout at that location.
Wow.
With the new bridge, we've negotiated with NYSDOT as part of the new bridge effort, installation of the water line on the bridge. They're going to put the necessary sleeves in the abutment so that we can run our water line through it and allow us to go on that bridge. And that agreement is forthcoming with respect to NYSDOT. The bridge has also been designed to hold the water line as well.
Does that push the project here back until the bridge is completed? I mean, not that it's a big deal.
To a certain extent, the answer is yes. Obviously, you can't put a line on a bridge that isn't there. Sure.
But secondly, might be more work,
but
too.
But the reverse is that they've negotiated the necessary easements with the property owners, and they want to exercise those easements, and that's why there's the need to establish the project as well as find the issue the negative declaration under secret. So those easements are better off signed than not signed.
Right. No, that's good.
Physically, how long is the extension? I'm not going to hold you to it.
It's approximately. I got to remember what the document says. Hold on a second. I can tell you.
What was your question again?
Physically, how long is the extension?
From the water district, I can tell you.
Okay.
The water district. It goes from like the natural food store there, Jake's Auto Body, down.
The natural food. You mean the co-op? Right?
Yeah, the co-op. That's okay. Pretty much on the other side is where the High Falls Water District would have ended. Because the Verizon building is the first building on the other side, and we have the municipal water there. They brought that in a few years ago. So it would go from the food co-op to Leggett Road, which is probably close to a mile, three-quarters of a mile. Then it would go up Leggett Road probably 2 miles. So it's probably 3 miles.
2.3 miles.
2.3, okay. So that was a little
2.3 miles.
Yeah, because actually they're going to the estate.
Vivekananda.
They're going there, and then they're going straight through the yard.
Through the
so they're not going down to the mobile station and then up 209.
This is just a naive personal interest question. So you dig it's underground?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and how big is the pipe, or how big is the pipe?
I think it's 8 inches.
Yeah, it's like this.
It's sized so that in the future, if there is a need for... Size in the future, if there's a need for water in Stone Ridge, that Stone Ridge can inform its water district and hook up to it.
Oh, okay. And how far down does it go?
Over 4 feet, over 4.5 feet.
Yeah, it's got to be below the frost line.
Yeah, below the frost line.
And
it will run along side roads, along the side of the right of way, on both in all the locations. We're a little bit into the road in Leggett Road, mainly because there's not a lot of road there.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a good priority. I mean, Stone Ridge has always had water issues. If you, on dry summers, you'll see well trucks on 209.
And just in case anyone asks, the negative deck is written in a manner, and the amount of taking from the High Falls Water District is written in a manner that no dorms can be constructed.
So there's always this, they're always trying to make the connection between the water line and the dorms.
Why did they do that?
They always make that connection. The town has made that connection.
Who? The city makes it?
No, the town.
The town fathers make it. So we now have resolutions from both the town of Rosendale and the town of Marbletown supporting the project. And the document that you're looking at, the neg deck, specifically precludes dorms.
Could it ever change?
Yes, you would have to go back and revisit the entire secret world.
Because, in a way, the town doesn't own the water. It's New York City's water. It should be New York City saying dorms and no dorms. Marbletown,
well,
it's got no skin in the game.
The town has, they do, Rich, because of the water district. The High Falls Water District Board has members from both Rosendale and Marbletown on it, and that's why both towns passed the necessary resolutions.
Let's say that.
I'm sorry, I missed what you said. Can you just reiterate what the process is to overturn this?
You wouldn't overturn it. You would revisit it.
Yeah,
you'd revisit it and open it up and then declare that you would go to do dorms and you'd go through the entire secret process, and part of that would be the water.
And the towns, both towns would have to approve it?
Well, one of the things that I think is a fail-safe here is the water district would have control in terms of whether it would supply additional water to the dorms. The water district board consists of members of the town boards from both towns.
Okay, that's
why
fine.
Why is it so controversial?
Yeah,
that's a long-held, issue, right, Manny? You would know, right?
No.
Since it's my district, I just remember, the last time there were dorm proposals. People feel it's going to change the character of the community. Kids drinking, whatever. And they're pretty protective of it. I haven't heard any concerns about this, and I read the neg deck pretty carefully, and I've been in communication with Dennis, and it's not for the purpose of, originally I thought there might be a concern that the water was being put in to ensure that there was enough water for dorms.
Well, that's the original, when Don Codd originally wanted the water here, it was for dorms. Because the wells were not enough for the dorms and for campus.
I think there's a...
I sat in early on.
The confusion and the concern, the municipalities, clearly the elected officials in both municipalities, and especially in the town of Marbletown, are extremely concerned about this. I will also say that the county executive was extremely concerned about this.
Yeah, but it's not their water.
We've made the case, I think, the working with the community college, that the need for this water is not dependent upon the dorms. The water supply situation here is extremely iffy. As the campus looks to modernize its facility, there's not enough water for sprinklers. There's not a sprinkler in these buildings. And so as you begin to modernize this facility and think about redoing this facility, you would want a sprinkler building. And that means that you're going to need additional water. So all in all, you're looking at meeting the health department.
There's no fire, you don't need it.
But you can't modernize the facility. You can't meet the sprinkler requirement.
Yeah.
You'd be building very large holding tanks and fire booster pumps and all this other stuff. So,
I totally support the idea of bringing the water line in and can understand that the college needs the upgrade. I get that. And I'm certainly not trying to open can of worms. I just want to say that the concept also of modernizing a college or a bringing upgrade, to me, I don't think of dorms as a necessarily an out of hand negative thing. I realize I'm not the host community.
There's a lot of people were not opposed to them. It's your local neighbors, but a lot of people in the community were not opposed to the dorms.
I mean, in some ways, you think about attracting a college. We talk all the time about the money we pay to our students going to other communities. Dorms would potentially attract other students from other communities to our college.
They have been successful in some instances.
Yeah.
And not successful in others.
Right. Dutchess is the most recent example of being unsuccessful.
Right, they're not filling the dorms.
Sullivan had a time too.
I don't know if this is, if you have the answer to this, but have the appropriate stakeholders from the community college that are aware of these provisions? And
yes.
One of the nice things about doing it this way is that you do the water issue separately, and then if you want to have the dorms discussion, you make the project the dorms and you discuss
it. They still, the community college still owns a significant amount of property where they have wells. They could still build the dorms and use the wells for the dorms then if they really wanted to. So it doesn't mean that... I know you're kind of shaking your head, but there's nothing wrong... Listen, those wells...
I mean, I'm trying to get critical public safety and health needs addressed in terms of...
We're keeping it simple.
We get into this...
I just don't like... just my personal opinion, the kind of like deal making. You know, well, we'll give it to you, but they can't have dorms. I don't know.
Well, if it's been a home issue, yeah.
Yeah, it's a home rule issue, and you know, they don't want the college to claim exemptions, so there's a whole.
Well, they could claim exemptions. They don't have the same zoning laws as a business or a house would have, but they could still do it because they, like I said, they got the wells that have fed this college for 40 years.
This doesn't prevent dorms.
No, it doesn't. Absolutely,
right.
Does not.
Right.
And you're also going to see this month resolutions to improve their septic system. So you've got a septic system issue. So you're starting to see some basic infrastructure upgraded on the college, and it's needed.
Which is great. It's needed, yeah. We've been talking about this for a long time.
Good. And actually, there was a point 7 or 8 years ago they had bottled water on campus. They couldn't even drink the water one dry summer. They were actually doing bottled water.
Moved by Bartel, seconded by Warren.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 5-0. Okay, we do have another resolution, which is, I didn't see it on the front. Is it 158?
Yeah.
Is establishing, oh, that's the cereal bonds.
I think you did all the resolutions.
158 is the thing for the bridge.
156?
Shoulders, I can't, 158.
Oh, did I?
Does that not belong in here? That doesn't belong in here.
I'm sorry, that does not belong in there.
Okay. We did the rest then?
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah. Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay. So we're done with the resolutions. We're going to go to new business.
I called you about it. I just wanted to ask if maybe we could ask Amanda Laval to come to the committee meeting to discuss the ash borers again, something we went into in depth some time ago, and with the change of chairmanship a couple years ago, we stopped the discussion. But I'm getting phone calls about it, concerns from citizens who are wondering, like, they have ash trees on their property where they come into the county right away. They're wondering, is the county going to take it? So I think even if she could just give us an update, because I know that there's a... That they're doing a lot of work, and that they're taking down a lot of these trees, county over. I forget the number that she told us a long time ago. And I think just an update would be helpful.
Do you want me to? Can we ask if she'll come to the next meeting to discuss that? Is that all right? Want to ask her? We can ask her.
Yeah, you could ask her. That would be great. She was super thorough last time. She had a whole plan. Remember, she had a whole plan.
Once I get up to speed here, I'll
just so we're not talking about it.
Yeah, no. Thank you, Chris. Have a good night. Good week. Enjoy the nice weather this week.
$1 in the DPW budget.
So I just need to hear, because I know that the last time it happened, that it was almost as if we were talking in several different vacuums, and when Amanda came, they made it clear that, okay, the county is...
Do you want to speak English?
And also, she had maps with,
the
black and the red. She made a presentation to the county planning board, which was really good.
Yeah, I think it would help for us to get some more.
Okay.
Because
so
as we come into spring and you start to see which trees are dead...
You can see them now. They're all turning. I mean, they're dying up by me, and they made it a long time, and now they're all starting to go.
I've heard that the estimate is that there will be none left.
Well, the Gypsy Moss got a bunch of trees how many years ago?
And then we should probably have somebody come about hemlock woolly adelgid as well.
Okay. You're dying too?
They're getting infected, and it's a much longer process. But
wow!
But there is a potential fix.
That was worth talking about too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, we had the butterfly presentation.
Yeah,
that was really, really.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll do that next month. Thanks, Trace. Legislative Green.
Next
2 months. Legislative Green is going to give us an update on the climate smart.
Yeah, as I mentioned last month, there's a few things coming up around solar energy. there's going to be a small meeting amongst the municipalities that have proposed projects, that have, some of which are stalled, to see if by bringing people together to share information and potential solutions, that we can kind of get them unstuck. Pat Courtney Strong and Hugo Jewell are working on coordinating that. And then the planning department has a solar zoning workshop coming up on March 22nd. Yep. And as I understand it, that's for the unified zoning?
No, that's both. If we're going to deal with the sort of like the residential scale solar and utility scale solar, both.
Okay.
So both of those issues will be addressed.
Okay.
And we're already seeing towns starting to respond with their zoning statutes.
All right. We should talk a little bit more then, because the Climate Smart folks have been working with Cornell Cooperative Extension and Orange County and Sullivan County to try to do a fairly large-scale event, but they should complement each other.
Yeah, I think just so the committee knows, one issue is how do communities respond to utility-scale solar in their communities if their zoning statute is silent on it? And most communities' zoning statutes are silent on how to treat solar. What Matt is talking about, at least I think what you're talking about, Matt, is that we're starting to see multiple companies engaged in Orange County trying to lease large tracts of undeveloped land that are open, which means the farm fields. And so one is the technical assistance. It's sort of like fracking with solar fracking kind of question, is what's a good lease? From the farm community. So that question is out there, and Cornell is addressing that. We're trying to address where and how on solar for those utility scale solar. And we see some of the communities are already starting to move. Some of the communities are talking about moratorium. We don't particularly care for moratoria on the utility scale solar. But by the same token, we think that there needs to be a little bit more precision, similar to thinking about cell towers. You know, where in the community are they best suited, kind of rather than everywhere in the community. And the companies are pretty much that are going around for leases are pretty much indiscriminate. I mean, they're asking for lands to be leased up in Sansonville.
As long as the sun hits it good.
Well, the problem is that's what people think. The difficulty is that's not the case for utility scale solar, because you have to get back to a substation. You have to tie it into the grid somehow. And tying it into the grid is expensive, so what they call their tie-in costs are significant. And that's what we're concerned about, A. And then we're also concerned about
it's
very difficult to farm solar underneath solar panels. Mm-hmm. As compared to windmills or gas wells. So we're trying to work out what kind of criteria you should use in terms of allowing them on agricultural lands. And we're thinking that deals with lands that have soils of statewide significance or prime soils, that you try to avoid those and you call them out in your zoning statute and say that you're not going to allow them, or you're going to allow only a certain percentage of them on a farm to be used for solar.
I just want to say that our big concern is how the proposed leases strip the property owners of their rights. And it's really tempting if you're a struggling farmer and you have 20 or more acres and they're offering, I had heard, $1,000 per acre per year, and some of the offers have been as much as $2,000 per acre per year. So you have 30 acres. That's a lot of money. But if you read over the notes that Susan Gillespie culled from a gentleman from Sullivan County, an attorney from Sullivan County, who has been working on this. Let me see if I can find his name quickly, Steve Mogul. And they've had some workshops out in Sullivan County, and they've been extremely well attended by their farmers. But we were concerned that, you know, to work with the agricultural community to let people know, to at least let their lawyer look at this and be prepared, you know, many of us in this room are actively working to promote solar and large-scale solar, but it should be done appropriately and not in a way that is going to be really harmful, particularly to farmers, but any large landowner, if they're not careful. You know, what if the company defaults? There's a lot of what-ifs. And so we wanted to just really do a focused event that would make people cautious, but also talk about the alternatives. How can, if you do have land and are interested in putting solar, and it makes sense in terms of interconnection and all of the where is the need and all of that, there are a lot of really beneficial ways to do that. The other thing is that you can bet if the developer is offering $1,000 per acre per year, they're planning to make a lot more than that on the property, and so maybe more of that should go to the property owner, and what other kinds of arrangements could be made, you know, if the property owner uses other development, the property owner might want to do community solar, and there are a lot of other alternatives. So that's what, between Dennis's or the planning board's event, and we'll make sure that however they're structured, they complement each other and don't, you know, overlap.
Legislator Hepburn.
I'm happy. I know Amanda has spoken about this in caucus, and I've heard about it before. But I'm curious, how are you going to reach out between the two events, both, I'm assuming, the Supervisors Association, but are you going to pull all the large land track owners in the county and somehow notify them just...
Send them why we have 50 acres.
I mean, that's my... Just that people are informed enough to make a decision that in these earliest stages of this getting figured out, I mean, you just passed this around and I scanned it and looked at the potential tax implications, you know, once the exemption period's over to a landowner, and someone who just sees the dollar signs might make a rash decision, but they might not be captured. They might not be someone who is reading a press release. So it seems to me we know who all the large landowners in the county are. Is there a way? Can we just...
Tracy, I didn't make copies of this because we haven't just... We're going to have a call at the end of the week to try to finalize it, but I can tell you that it includes real property tax, it includes the realtors, it includes the assessors, and it includes the ag community as co-sponsors, and then we have a tentative agenda. I didn't want to circulate this any further than the sort of key stakeholders right now. But by next month, this is tentatively scheduled for April 4th or 5th.
Okay.
And by then, the March 22nd event will have passed. But we'll do it in a way that makes sense. And we really want to try to get the media there to help get the word out. And if it's widely co-sponsored, including the Regional Council has an energy working group, I mean, there's a lot of people that are concerned about this, but there are many, many more people that don't know anything about it. And I know one farmer got like four different offers from the Farm Bureau. So we're trying to pull all those stakeholders together.
Look at the air photos.
That's what I mean.
That's literally what's going on. You know, it's parcel viewer 101.
But that's what I mean. They're using information that we have, so we should be able to easily just reach out to the same people that they're pulling from. Not to give legal advice, but to simply say, this event is going on. You are a large landowner. You may be interested in this event. That's it. You know what I mean? Like, we're not giving legal advice. We're just saying, inform yourself.
Yeah, we've done some. I already have about 90 people signed up for the March 22nd event. I usually cut them off around about 100, 120. We hold it here at the college. So I'm right around cut off right now. But we would anticipate the farm community is amazingly conversant amongst themselves. So I'm not too worried about the farm community. It's
but
landowners
there's a,
outside
there's a
the
lot
farm.
Of landowners yeah. outside of the, and part of the reason I know that, and Manna knows it too, is that just when we went through that exercise in terms of the potential of siting a landfill, which was a much bigger tract than we're talking about, but you know we went through a matrix that started with size, and there were hundreds and hundreds. And if the size were dropped down to 30 acres, it would have been huge.
The key here is, you know, the easiest way to do this is, you know, not only just size, because they don't want to cut trees. Let's
right.
be honest, they don't want to cut trees unless they have to. So you end up looking at land cover as well. So size and land cover are one of the ways that they go. We suspect that you're going to see the similar things that municipalities did with cellular facilities. You want them on their lands first. If you own lands first, that's probably where you want to have them. And then there's other places that come out pretty strong in terms of their potential. Socrates as a community, it's probably has one of the strongest potentials. They have large areas of land that is poor soil conditions but are now in ag districts that are just usually hay. They have high water tables, they're not developable for most instances. And there's a brand new substation from Central Hudson. So when you think of Socrates as a community, you start to say, you know, that's probably a good place to look. You know.
Yeah, Winston Farm. Maybe we can find something for Winston Farm. Farm. Let's
say I'm saving the farm. We've got some other farm. Winston Farm has good soil.
All right.
I just wanted to say I think it's great that the county is being proactive and assisting municipalities in this area. And combined with what Legislative Green was talking about, their effort to work with municipalities that are struggling with their own solar, you know, arrays and their own projects. I know. Before I became a member of the legislature, I was a member of the Environmental Commission of Woodstock, and I've seen a small town struggle with the issue of wanting to implement solar, but it's just for, you know, small town governments, the resources, the people, just the basic knowledge you need. I mean, we had a former councilman, Ken Panza, who's, you know, beyond knowledgeable, but, you know, not every community has that. Even with him, you know, I saw the town struggle. Woodstock has had panels sitting in storage for years, and for multiple reasons haven't been able to get them up, even on town property. But then just thinking ahead about this larger scale issue and zoning, especially with some of the more rural towns, you know, I just think it's good that the county is being proactive and, you know, helping these municipalities that have seen how difficult it can be for them to actually achieve it and to achieve it properly. So
that's actually, if I may, there's another future forum on municipal solar. This is really more to caution the large landowners, but there's a whole toolkit how to do municipal solar, and we'll have a range of speakers. So there's really three different events that are coming up. But we wanted to get the ones that were stuck, including Woodstock, Eastopus, talking to each other, because they're pretty far advanced, and, you know, if there's a way to help them get unstuck. But then working with the Supervisors Association to do something really educational beyond the focus on zoning about municipal solar. And again, I think, you know, Pat Courtney and Hugo, they currently have a grant to work on this, and they have been awarded another grant, but with NYSERDA, it's going to take a little while, so it'll be, that might not be till the summer. But it'll be soon, and it's being planned.
Yeah, that's great.
Just a couple more updates. I apologize.
No, you're great. We appreciate it.
When you say Mr. Soil, I just want to remind the committee that the county does have two solar projects of the megawatt scale. One on this campus. We are working towards a uncoordinated review with respect to SEAKER for this. So we would anticipate being back to this body probably April, maybe May, but I'm thinking April. Negative declaration for that facility is, I think it's about 0.9 megawatts. We did achieve lead agency status for our facility on the UCRRA on the landfill.
That's about 7.5 to 8 acres of solar panels. It's over 2 megawatts. We're going to go through the environmental review. We've started that process, so we should be back. Depending upon timing, we should be back, I would say, early summer with a negative declaration for that. We believe we can declare that. I'm a little concerned that Tim said he changed his board over because we need approval of his board to go forward, but we think that that's the case, and we think we should be able to move that forward. So that's just two on the solar side. And one thing on the other environmental side, Ulster County established March 1 through March 30th as the area when you can sign up for individual farms can sign up to be in an agricultural district. We're taking those applications now. If anybody has any of the farmers that want to be in an agricultural district, now is the time to come in on that basis. There's a process here. We'll end this. The process essentially is that we take the applications in. We then move forward with those applications and get a lot of the background work done in our office. We then transmit them to the chair of the legislature, we do this for timing reasons. He transmits them back to the Farmland Protection Board, so we do that, and that starts a clock, and then the Farmland Protection Board will meet, will make recommendations. Those recommendations come back to the legislature, and the legislature either endorses or changes them. And we've been very fortunate. The county continues to add thousands of acres, through this annual process. And what we're seeing is a lot of smaller scale farms and a lot of different types of farming. And I don't know whether anybody knows that there's now malt barley being grown in Ulster County. They're starting to talk about malt barley being grown in Ulster County and hops
for the pubs for the microbrews.
And if anybody wants to get in the hop growing business, it's they're real easy
it's
to grow.
And
it's happening. It's happening. Yeah, they're real easy to grow, but they're real hard to harvest.
Do the deer eat them?
Yeah.
Do they?
Yeah. I've actually thought about getting in the hospital.
You know, the one thing about this is really neat stuff, but I just remember a few years ago, a guy up in Denning wanted to put a wind tower up for his house. What was it? Yeah. Judd Hirsch.
Yeah. Judd Hirsch.
And it, in Denning. Yeah. And it just became so political and so... I just hate to see something like this, politics take it over, you know, just chase everybody away that wants to do solar and wants to do good stuff. I could just, and this guy ended up not doing it. Can you imagine a windmill being voted down in Denning, which has got, what, about 80,000 acres and 500 residents, and it got voted down, a stupid little, not even a big windmill.
It was a big controversy.
In my opinion, you get all these different things involved. Sometimes it just they get made up just to say no, just to, and I'm not saying in this case, but I like the education part, but when you start educating the zoning boards, I think sometimes there's an underlying thing in there to educate them to not approve things that people don't want. Some people don't want. What?
And you know, those of us who are actively working to promote solar, it's a double-edged sword. I just don't want to see solar get a black eye, you know.
No, I know. But on the same token, if the farm's going to turn into housing developments, then the next housing boom. So do you want solar things that maybe aren't perfect to be there, or do you want houses? It's just a no-win situation.
But put the solar on the roof.
But correct me if
I'd rather have my ground and have no houses there personally, living in the country. But
correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think we're talking about not wanting solar per se. We're talking about protecting landowners' rights, just so that landowners don't sign away.
Well, no, I think there was a double cut because we were talking about working with zoning and planning boards too. Coming up with appropriate laws for the municipalities I'm all for both. I mean, certainly educating the property owners.
But I certainly think, because I can imagine it being very appealing hearing on the simple, and you know, it really is analogous to the stories we've seen made into narrative films and we've seen in documentaries and on the news with fracking where a company comes in and makes an offer. It's very appealing. It's certain, and next thing you know, it's a different outcome because we're talking about the environmental hazard of the fracking outcome. But it could be the same if, you know, 10 years, 15 years from agreeing to a solar farm, all of a sudden your property taxes go up because now you're reassessed at $3 million when you had an ag exemption before and you didn't even think about that, but you're responsible for the taxes, and next thing you know, that you know, there's a whole big mess and the company went bankrupt. It's like,
so, you know, the farm community is acting, if you didn't know, both windmills, and even if they're community windmills and natural gas wells, are exempt from taxes under, if you're an ag district, you're receiving ag exemption. The farmers have worked that out.
Really?
They're already working to have the state adopt similar legislation with respect to solar facilities. So if you put it on an ag farm field, even though you can't farm under them, they're not going to add anything. Well, you won't be able to tax them.
Unbelievable.
So we're going to pay for it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
they're already lobbying the state to change the statute.
That's unbelievable.
To include solar as being exempt.
That's crazy.
A lot of farmers in advance are putting solar on.
Yeah. But then what happened to that farmer down in Plattekill with his remote net metering? He got really, you know... Yeah, he put the best place to put it was on the farm, which is an LLC, and his house is right next door, which he's the only you know, stockholder of the LLC, and he's the owner of the house, so he went to remote net meter where he uses all the electricity is in his house, not on the fields where his farm is, and they won't let him remote net meter because that's an LLC and his house is not in the LLC, and so the Central Hudson just randomly decided that you have to have either the same Social Security or EIN for both properties.
You can't, but
that's not in the regulations. Central Hudson just randomly said, no, he submitted like 30 documents proving that that's him. But, you know.
Put his house under the LLC?
I was
going to
say, there's a pretty simple solution.
Now I can't do that.
I think there's some, you know, like inheritance thing. He doesn't want to do that. He wants to
change the lot. Right. A lot of lines, a lot of things you can do. Wow. One way to get that house.
And Central Hudson just decided himself.
So what's the electricity he's getting here? He doesn't sell it back?
No, he sells it to Central Hudson, and he has to buy electricity for his house. So Central Hudson pays him like, I don't know, like 2 cents a kilowatt when they buy it, and they charge him 5 cents a kilowatt when he buys it back from them. The same
corporate America.
And they get, and they're the ones that decide that he's not eligible to remote net meter. They shouldn't be the judge on whether or not he's eligible. That's the problem that I have. If he's wrong, that's fine, but Central Hudson shouldn't be the one that gets to decide, in my humble opinion.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you.
Sorry. Thanks, Kathy. No, that was interesting. All right, any other business? Motion to adjourn?
No motion.
Legislator Bartels?
Second.
Legislator Weaver? All in favor?
Today.
Opposed? Thank you, everybody.
7:43, and we are adjourned.